Today we are really fortunate to have His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhuji to enlighten on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam from 5.14.44 onwards. So before I hand over the call to Prabhuji, Prabhuji is set to join. I would like to hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji to give a brief introduction on Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Bhargavi Mataji, Hare Krishna, dear devotees, please accept my humble obeisances, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhu is a monk, mentor, and spiritual author. He has been educated in electronics and telecommunications engineering from the Government College of Engineering in Pune. He subsequently served as a software engineer in a prominent multinational software corporation. Seeing the prevalent problems of stress, depression, addiction, and overall misdirection, all due to the lack of spirituality, he felt inspired to dedicate his life to the cause of sharing the spiritual wisdom of Bhagavad Gita. He travels all over the world, from Australia to America, giving talks on spiritual subjects in universities such as Princeton and Cambridge, and companies such as Intel and Microsoft. Prabhuji is the author of the world's only Gita Daily feature, wherein he writes a 300-word inspirational reflection on a verse from Bhagavad Gita. As of now, he has written over 1,700 Gita meditations that are posted on GitaDaily.com, and they are also read through daily feeds to thousands, from all over the world. He also answers questions by seekers on his site, thespiritualscientist.com, where his over 3,500 audio answers and several hundred articles are available. His articles have been published in many national newspapers, including Indian Express, Economic Times, and the Times of India in the Speaking Tree column. His writings in English have been translated into several foreign languages and several Indian languages, and he is a member of ISKCON's leading intellectual body, the Shastric Advisory Council, and is the associate editor of ISKCON's global magazine, Back to Godhead. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu is also the author of 16 books. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much for this brief introduction. So, till Prabhuji joins. Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for giving your valuable time and association in this Bhakti Sangha conference call. We are really fortunate to hear. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I hand over the call to you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Happy to be here. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी इति नामिने. नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा. I'm grateful to be here with all of you today, and we are discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5. Chapter 14, sorry, chapter 14. So, has the verse and purport been read, or I'm still. No, I should read.
Prabhuji, we need to read it. Mataji can share.
Okay, so 5:14:44. So Yadustajan Kshitisuta Swajanarth Daran Prathyam Shriyam Suravarai Sadayavalokam Naichandrupastaduchitam Mahatam Madhudvit Sevanurupta Manasam Abhavopi Falguhu. So Yod, so synonyms. Do we do synonyms or just do the word for word translation purport? Okay, so yo, yaha, who, dustyajan, very difficult to give up, kshiti, the earth, sut, children, then swajana arthadaran, relatives, rich, riches and a beautiful wife, prarthayam, desirable, shriyam, the goddess of fortune, suravarai, by the best of the demigods, sadaya avalokam, whose merciful glance. No, not. Aichat, desired. Drupaha, the king. Tad uchitam. This is quite befitting. Mahatam, of great personalities, Mahatmas. Madhudvit, of Lord Krishna, who killed the demon Madhu. Seva anurakta, attracted by the loving service. Manasam, of those whose minds. Abhavaha api, even the position of liberation. Falguhu, insignificant. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace is Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. So, my dear King, the activities of Maharaj Bharat are Bharat Maharaja wonderful. He gave up everything difficult for others to give up. He gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family. His opulence was so great that even the demigods envied it. Yet he gave it up. It was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee. He could renounce everything because he was so attracted to the beauty, opulence, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation of the Supreme Personality of God and Krishna. Krishna is so attractive that one can give up all desirable things for his sake. Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant for those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord. Purport. This verse confirms Krishna's all attractiveness. Maharaj Bharat was so attracted to Krishna that he gave up all his material possessions. Generally, materialistic people are attracted by such possessions. Ato graha kshetra sutapta vitte janasya moho yam aham ameti. Bhagavatam 5:5:8. One becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. The attraction for material things is certainly due to illusion. There is no value in attraction to material things, for the conditioned soul is diverted by them. One's life is successful if he is absorbed in the attraction of Krishna's strength, beauty, and pastimes, as described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadis are attracted to merging into the existence of the Lord, but Krishna is more attractive than the desire to merge. The word abhava means not to take birth again in this material world. A devotee doesn't care whether he is going to be reborn or not. He is simply satisfied with the Lord's service in any condition. That is real mukti. Vihayasya hare dasye karmana manasagira nikhilashu apyavasthashu jivan muktaha savuchyate. One who acts to serve Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence and words is a liberated person. Even within this material world. Bhakti Sama Sindhu 1:2:187. A person who always desires to serve Krishna is interested in ways to convince people that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead and that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. That is his ambition. It doesn't matter whether he's in heaven or in hell. This is called Uttama Shloka Lalasa. Thank you. So, I'll be talking here on a very important topic. In fact, Vishwanathji Thakur says that this is the single greatest necessity for all souls in this world, and that is the higher taste. So we will be discussing today about how higher taste may be gained and lost and regained. So this particular verse is describing the extraordinary higher taste of Maharaj Bharat. He had the kind of pleasure that most people only dream about. And he, despite having all those pleasures, he just turned away from them. And he So now the question comes up, how do we gain higher taste? So there are multiple perspectives for this, and we'll try to have a balancing idea here. So one perspective is that we need to give up lower taste to get higher taste. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishwari prasaktanam taya aparita chetasam vivasayatmika buddhi samadhav navidiyate, that as long as we are captivated by bhoga ishwarya, by the desire for wealth and desire for sensual pleasure, then we cannot find samadhan. We cannot be in samadhi. Samadhi is actually related with samadhan. When can a soul be in samadhi? When they are getting great samadhan, such samadhan that manyate naadhikam tataha, that yam labdva cha aparam labham manyate naadhikam tataha. One thing that once I have got this, I don't need anything else at all. That's samadhan. So when samadhan is satisfaction, samadhi is absorption. So when we get satisfaction, there can be absorption. So this is saying that to gain higher taste, we need to give up lower taste. But then Krishna also says in the Gita that we can only give up lower taste when we gain higher taste. And he says that vishaya vinivartante nirahārasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. So vishaya vinivartante, we may give up the sense objects, but they feel like nirahārasya. We feel as if we are having no food at all. We feel like starving, and that's why we can't starve for long. It says we need food eventually, so we feel it's the need and we'll gravitate back towards it. But only when, what happens is param drishtva, we get a higher taste, nivartate, when we get become peaceful. Do we have to give up lower taste to gain higher taste? But we are pleasure seeking creatures. So unless we get pleasure somewhere, we cannot give up some other source of pleasure. So how can we, unless we gain some higher taste, how can we give up lower taste? This is actually, in one sense, the predicament of souls in this world, especially of spiritual seekers. So the broad resolution is, begin wherever we can. Just relish those activities, relish that higher taste. So if you get some higher taste in kirtan, if you get some higher taste in katha, just relish that. And then, wherever there is lower taste, okay, restrain it as much as we can. So we can, it's not that this and A and B, these two extremes, you could say. It's that we just begin where we can. Sometimes we may make a resolution and we might be able to give up the lower taste. Sometimes we might not be able to. Sometimes we might make a resolution. If we're just going through a normal life and suddenly some experience just fills us and fulfills us, that's how we get higher taste. So just the idea is, begin however we can. So now the key over here is, when these two extremes that I talked about, that higher taste and lower taste, it is not talking about the beginning, it is talking about the sustaining. That means, even when somebody is caught in lower taste, they can still get higher taste. Somebody might be breaking all the four regulative principles, they may be engaging in all kinds of sensual activities. But they can come to a temple and they can dance in kirtans and they can feel something special. They can behold the darshan of the deities and they can feel something special. So the higher taste, it's not that it's inaccessible because of the lower taste. But rather, one cannot sustain oneself in the higher taste without giving up lower taste. It means a drunkard may come to a temple and they feel very good in kirtan, but then they will go back again, the alcohol will pull them. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that the lower taste pulls a person. And now we can't sustain giving up lower taste without getting higher taste. Okay, I'm dissolved, but okay, I'm not going to do this activity. I'm not going to overeat. I'm not going to oversleep. I'm not going to gratify my senses. But unless we get some higher taste, we may give it up for some time, but we'll not be able to sustain it. So the point I'm making is that beginning is always possible. Sustaining is the challenge. Now, one way around it is that we can just redefine beginning. Redefine beginning means, what does beginning mean? In one sense, every day can be a beginning. Every day, we start fresh. It's in warfare, it is commonly said that yesterday's victories do not guarantee today's victories. That every day is a fresh battle. A batsman may have scored a century or a double century in the previous day, but the next day, each ball the batsman has to play on merit. One ball wrong and the batsman will get out. So in one sense, our past doesn't matter so much. Every day it's a new battle. And from where we are, I can get some higher taste. From where we are, we can just let go of some lower taste. Now then we say that if it's every day it's a new beginning, then what is the use of practice? What is the use of all the efforts that we have done in the past? Well, they're not wasted. They are there. They're very much, they provided the experience of fighting. Fighting against the lower taste, fighting to resist the lower taste, fighting to persist in the higher taste. Just like if a batsman has batted for a long time on the previous day, then they know the pitch. They have experience of their environment over there, experience of the bowlers. They know they are better situated to play. A warrior who has fought many wars, each war is a new war, but that warrior is much more equipped, much more the experience makes them better suited to fight. So in one sense, every day is a beginning and every day is not a beginning. So the point I'm making is that sometimes if we start thinking, oh, for the rest of my life, I will never do this again, then it starts feeling like a big burden. How will I be able to live without this for the rest of my life? So the one way to solve the issue is, don't think about the rest of life. It's just too long. When we say, for the rest of life, I won't do this, the mind very quietly and sneakily says, oh, you have the rest of your life to stick to that resolution. Just now you can enjoy a little bit. And from that little bit comes a lot. So let's think in terms of, okay, one day, 1 hour, and just do it and move forward. So we can treat every day as a beginning, and beginning is always possible for us to do. Now when we talk about taste, higher taste, lower taste, so whose taste are we talking about? We say it's each sadhaka, it's my taste, your taste. Well, okay, but what within us? You know, in our inner world, there's a soul, there's an intelligence, there's a mind. Sometimes the ego is included. Sometimes if you see, for example, the 342 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't include the ego in the hierarchy, because in one sense, the ego is what causes the soul to misidentify with the mind and the intelligence. So when we talk about getting higher taste or changing the taste, so whose taste are we talking about? Is it the soul's taste? Well, the soul is Satchitananda. Soul is always pure. Soul is never contaminated. So soul has always the potential to love Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhika Bunai. So it's like the ground is fertile, and if the seed is put over there, always a harvest will come. Soul has the potential to love Krishna, but the soul is currently dormant. So it's not that the soul has a lower taste. Then is it the intelligence taste or is the mind's taste? Well, it's both. It's both, and that's why Krishna says several times in the Bhagavad Gita that Mai Arpit Mano Buddhir. Mame Vaishyasya Samshayah. He talks about it in the 8th chapter. And again in the 12th chapter, the same thing. If you absorb your mind and intelligence in me, you can come to me. So essentially, when we are talking about taste, we are not talking about the soul's taste. We're talking about the taste of the intelligence and primarily the mind. So now as far as the intelligence taste is concerned, that taste is changeable by sound reasoning, which will lead us to conviction. So for example, say somebody is very attracted to a particular sports player or a particular movie star or a particular politician. And then they come to know that that person is not what they make out to be. That person will be shocked for some time. And then they realize, oh, okay, actually it's true. This person is a deceiver. Once they understand that, then they say, okay, I don't want to read about this person. Just put it aside. I'm not interested. So in one sense, the intelligence can be convinced faster. The intelligence, once it gets some sound reasoning, it leads to conviction. But the mind is not, so the intelligence is driven by reasoning. And that's why its taste can be changed by reasoning. But the mind is not driven by reason. It's not driven by logic. It's driven by emotion. I like this. I don't like this. And for the change of the taste of the mind, it needs repeated good experience. So when again and again and again, I feel good after doing this. This is good. This is good. This is good. So I may have a conception. This is not good. So for example, somebody may think fasting is, it's very painful. I feel hungry. I feel empty and I feel weak. But then maybe we fast sometime. And then we realize, okay, it's not bad. But then after some time, we fast again. We are not looking forward to it, but after that, I feel, hey, you know, after I fast, you know, maybe the weight on the weighing scale goes down. I feel good because of that. Maybe I actually feel more rested and rejuvenated over a period of time. My health is better. So then, but the mind has to, for somebody to start liking fasting is going to be very, very difficult. By intelligence, we may understand the benefits of fasting. But it can happen after repeated good experiences somebody has. Somebody wants to exercise regularly. We want to chant regularly for matter. Oh, chanting is so difficult. But over a period of time, when we get good experience again and again, that's when the mind's taste changes. So when we're talking about lower taste and higher taste, we're primarily talking about the minds, although it can refer to the intelligence also. So to understand the difference between the mind and the intelligence taste, we can consider a metaphor. There's a metaphor of parenting. The intelligence is like a parent, the mind is like a child. Now suppose if there is sickness and the medicine is to be taken. Now say the mother and the child, they both go to a doctor. Now the sickness is there in the entire family. Now the doctor can talk, and if the bitter medicine is to be taken, the doctor can very easily convince the mother to take the medicine. But the child may be too immature, too fickle to even understand. Oh, actually, I don't feel good, but this is the medicine. This medicine, I take it. It feels worse. I don't want to take it. So, but if the mother is convinced by the doctor, what will happen is the mother will take the medicine and the mother will make the child also take the medicine. So generally, when we talk about the word purification or realization, so purification, we are talking about primarily of the mind. So it takes time. So intelligence, so to change the intelligence inclination is far easier than to change the mind's inclination. And that's why when we have regular hearing, what are we doing is we are empowering. We are empowering the mind. We are empowering the intelligence. Once the intelligence is empowered, it's like the mother is convinced. Once the mother is convinced, even if the child is reluctant, the mother will make the child take the medicine. So regular hearing, it actually is like convincing the parent, convincing the mother. Now, if we move forward from here, so conviction to realization. So the journey toward higher taste, it begins with conviction. Actually, that is the higher taste and this is the lower taste. The intelligence has to first accept that. And then when we say realization, that means the mind accepts it. That which is a reality, and this is a higher pleasure, this is a lower pleasure. Once the mind accepts it, that's when we actually get realization. So let's see how we can move from lower taste to higher taste. So who does what to whom, and then the result. A convinced mother gives bitter medicine to the child. It is not just given to the child, the mother also takes. So our intelligence also is to study and apply and understand. Okay, why should I remember Krishna? What are the glories of Krishna? But then after that, intelligence has to ensure that the mind starts wandering, get it back, fix it on Krishna. So the mother has to first understand the medicine is good, and she gives the medicine to the child. Now what happens to the child is given the medicine, the child takes it resentfully. I don't want it, child opposes. But eventually the child starts feeling better. And once the child starts feeling better, then, this medicine is so good. I feel so good after taking this medicine. After a period of time, the child will start taking medicine willingly and happily. Now, of course, generally speaking, our hope is that we don't have to take any medicine for life. That I take this medicine, I get cured, and it's over. But there are some diseases for which sometimes people may have to take medicines for life. So we can consider that our existence is like that. Material existence is a lifelong disease, bhava roga. Just being in bhava, in material existence, itself means that we have the roga, the affliction, the disease. So a convinced intelligence forces the mind to focus on Krishna. So when we are hearing, when we are chanting, when we are serving, mind wants to go here, there, everywhere. The mind recoils and resents. No. But slowly, over a period of time, what happens is it starts relishing two things, the peace and the joy of remembering Krishna. Hey, this is good. I should think this is bad. It's actually good. I actually feel better. I feel so peaceful. I feel so happy. And that is when the mind becomes attracted to Krishna and it becomes situated in the higher taste. So that is what we all aspire for. So from the higher taste for the intelligence, that is conviction, gradually we move toward the higher taste for the mind, that is realization. So now, if we consider, is this process reversible? Yes, it is. Relapse is always a possibility. Why? Relapse means, lapse is a mistake. Relapse is a mistake where we go back again into the previous patterns of behaving or thinking. Now, so if we recklessly expose ourselves to lower taste, that may captivate us again. Why? Because overall, our mind is fickle. Fickle means what? Fickle means restless, unpredictable, immature, unreasonable. It is unsteady. So it may be enjoying something which is actually good, but still the devilishness of the mind is saying, let me try that also. This is good. Why do you want to try it? That's not the good. No, maybe it will be good. Maybe once in a while it will be good. Let me try it. So if we are to go steadily in our spiritual life, we may have got some higher taste. But just because I have got the higher taste now doesn't mean the higher taste is going to stay forever. If I expose myself to a lower taste, I will relapse. Now, of course, Bharat Maharaj is a very exalted soul and he was situated in bhava. It is like a stage slightly before bhava, we can say, where he was having tears of love when he would remember the Lord. And actually his lower days were not directly sense gratification. It was more like he thought, I have in the past been a king. I have been a protector. Now also it's my duty to be a protector. And in that sense, he went back to the past role. So there is a certain, you could say, a subtler form of enjoyment in giving protection to someone. In finding that I am capable of giving protection to someone. So in his case, it was that kind of relapse that happened. But the relapse is always a possibility. Now, we may all have some slips and falls, and they may not be very dangerous. But what may happen is sometimes, generally use the word coincidence in a positive sense. Two things happen unexpectedly together. Coincidence. Incidence is happening. Co is together. And two things happen together. So coincidence is usually talked about in a positive sense. But here I'm using it in a coincidence that is catastrophic. It can be disastrous. So what do we mean by this? That just when we are a little lax about our higher taste, okay, this is there. I've been engaging in this for months, years, decades. This is always there. So we just become a little lax, we let go. And that's the time when lower taste comes to us. And lower taste comes in an especially captivating, tantalizing, almost irresistible kind of way. So that is when these two things, if they happen simultaneously, it can be devastating. So we are losing the lower taste. So the example, and then we are losing the higher taste and the lower taste comes up. This is what happened to, in one sense, Bharat Maharaj. So I've given a metaphorical example over here. Say we are in the Bhavasagar and there are waves coming. And to protect ourselves from the waves, we have held on to an anchor. And the anchor is very strong and we are held on to it strongly. And by that way, we are steady and maybe the anchor is slowly moving towards the coast. And then we will eventually be out of the ocean. And sometimes we may just let go of the anchor. And nothing happens. That means we become a little lax in doing the activities that give us higher taste. But nothing happens. We let go of the higher taste and nothing happens. And then we again catch hold of the higher taste. So that may be possibilities. Sometimes we could say some mistake, some looseness, it has no consequences. Or sometimes a wave may come and hit us, but we have held on to the higher taste. That means something tempts us. And in the past, if we hadn't had the anchor, we would have been swept away by the wave. So like that, if that same temptation had come to us in the past when we are not practicing bhakti, we might have just get completely captivated by that temptation. Indriyanam icharatam. Yan mano anubidiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur navanvambasi. Krishna says how the waves and the wind in the ocean can sweep things away. It's 267 in the Gita. So sometimes temptations may come and we may also say no to them. And we think, oh, now I've advanced. In the past, this temptation would have agitated me. Now it has not agitated me. Now, okay, I have grown spiritually. That is good. Nowadays, I prefer the word grown spiritually rather than advanced spiritually. Because many people nowadays especially are very suspicious of that religion is a business. People do religion for gaining money from innocent people, defrauding people. So for many people, spiritual advancement seems, the word spiritual, combination spiritual advancement seems very, very commercial, self-seeking. Just like you see professional advancement, you seek financial advancement, you seek social advancement. So like that, you're seeking spiritual advancement. So for them, the word advancement seems quite mundane. So Prabhupada uses it in a very positive sense that you're growing spiritually, you're advancing on the spiritual path. But just as Prabhupada would use the word cult, and now the word cult has a negative connotation, so we don't use it. So for many people, advancement also has a negative connotation. So I also sometimes slip into using it, but I try to avoid using it whenever I become conscious of that. So we may have grown spiritually and that's how we are able to resist that temptation. But still, we need to hold on to the anchor. Suppose both the things happen simultaneously. We just let go of the anchor sometime. And in the past, we had let go of the anchor. Maybe a wave had also come, but it was a small wave. It started hitting us and we held back the anchor. We held the anchor again. Nothing happened. But if we let go of the anchor, and that's the time a giant wave comes, it hits us, it picks us up. And he just throws us far away. So even a well-situated devotee can sometimes have a disastrous fall. So now, of course, this doesn't happen overnight. We may say this is a coincidence. In one sense, it is the two bad things happening together. But there is a seed for it. We are letting go of the higher taste. We are letting go of the thing that was keeping us safe. It could be our sadhana, it could be our swadhyaya, it could be our seva, it could be the particular thing that whatever it is that gives us higher taste. But when we let go of that, and that's the time when this particular wave hits us, we can be swept away. So that is what happened to, in one sense, Bharat Maharaj. He had renounced the world and he had left everything. But then he was just doing a sadhana, and then he saw this deer and he said, okay, let me save the baby. Now, saving the baby was fine. But then when he started thinking that, oh, this baby deer's mother has died. So who's going to protect this baby? I have to protect the baby. So see, one act of compassion is fine. Even if we may say it's a material compassion, okay, but that's fine. We can do that. If we don't do that, we'll be hard-hearted. So if we see a beggar going along the way and the beggar is in a very bad condition, we might give that beggar food. And that's good. That's some prasad if we give. That's kind-heartedness. And that's what we want, to have that soft-heartedness. But if somebody starts worrying, I give that beggar food right now, but where will they get their meals next time? What do I do? Oh, maybe, I have to take an extra job so that I can earn money so that I can maintain the beggar. No. You don't have to do that. You are not the maintainer of that beggar. Yes, the beggar may say, very old person, might be a small child. And we say, the child is innocent. Child is ignorant. Who will protect the child? Okay, then if you are in that situation, maybe you can connect the child with some adoption agency, take them to children protection services. Now, of course, in that situation, if somebody is a householder, they want to adopt a child, it's an exceptional situation, they can do that. But in Bharat Maharaj's case, so the point I was making is that one act of compassion is fine. Not doing that could be hard-hearted. But just letting that compassion drive us away from our whatever purpose was there. So if Bharat Maharaj is really concerned about who will maintain, then what about his praja? What about his family? How were they maintaining themselves in his absence? We say, there is a whole system over there, they take care of them. Well, there is a prakriti here also. And ultimately, the Lord takes care of all living beings. So his mistake was not to save the deer, but his mistake was to consider that I have to keep saving the deer from danger. And that's when he became attached. So that's how he started becoming loose in his sadhana. And he started getting more attracted to the deer. And then everything fell apart eventually when he died in the presence, seeing the deer, longing for the deer. And then he became a deer. So these two coincidences happening together can be very dangerous. And that's why if sometimes somebody gets swept away, somebody who we thought was a very serious devotee, and then they fall away and do something which is so shocking for us. How could they have done this? Now we need to understand that we don't know what kind of wave had hit them. What kind of wave had hit them? What kind of wave just picked them up and just threw them far away? So we may be fortunate that that kind of wave has not hit us. So yes, of course, if they've done something wrong and terribly wrong, they've hurt people, then that has to be taken into consideration. But we don't despise or condemn people, because what kind of dangers life may bring upon us human beings in this world, we can't say. We don't know when we are in the ocean what kind of wave is going to hit us in the future. So now this may lead to the question that, now this seems to be like a very functional and scary example that, I let go of the anchor, I get swept away. But then we also hear higher taste is eternal. Krishna says, Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayo na vidyate. Swalpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. That in this path there is no loss, there is no diminution. So then, do we lose the higher taste? No. What we have gained is never lost. Whatever attraction to Krishna, whatever attraction to transcendence we have got, that will always stay with us. But you could say in one sense, our access to it is lost. So Prabhupada gives the example that you have a bank account, you have money in the bank account, but you lose your bank account number. You can't access that account. So another example could be that, say we have a treasure that was deep down inside our own house. And somebody told us that treasure is there. And we have been digging. And now part of the treasure has come out, and I'm just getting the treasure out, and we're thinking, now I'll be rich with this treasure. And at that time, suddenly a huge landslide comes over there. And that landslide comes and completely changes the surface topography. And then that same treasure which you had dug out, it is buried again. It's in our own backyard. The backyard is so big that where exactly is it buried? And suppose in that same landslide, we get hit. We hit our head and we fall unconscious. And then we forget about the treasure. We forget where the treasure is. So the treasure is still in our backyard, but our access to it is lost. So in that sense, a devotee, or not just a devotee, anybody on the transcendental path, they don't exactly fall. It is rather, you can use the word fall down because it's conventionally used, but it's more like we temporarily lose. Now, that loss is temporary, but how temporary is it? It depends. The soul keeps misusing their free will. It can go on for even many lifetimes. That money is there in the bank. That treasure is there in the backyard. But it may take a long time to get it back. So now, what do we do to protect ourselves? So I'll conclude with this one point that Krishna says, Asamshayam Mahabaho Manodur Nigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya Vairagena Chigruhyate. So here you'll notice that I have highlighted these two words, Abhyasa and Vairagya. So we discussed that the lower taste and higher taste, it is primarily with respect to the mind. And how do we change the taste of the mind? Well, it's going to take a long time. Well, then the question comes up, during this long journey, how can we persist in maintaining the steady taste of the mind? And so that is what we'll discuss in conclusion. So two things. To progress toward higher taste, gratefully cultivate higher taste. That is abhyasa. Abhyasa means practice. Do again and again. So be grateful. Not just do the activities that give a higher taste, but cultivate that higher taste. That means try to do it more. Try to get into it more. If we find something, okay, I love Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay. You could do your other sadhana, but maybe read that a little bit more. I love hearing the classes of this particular Vaishnava or Vaishnavi. You find that, then hear those more and more. And so cultivate, and not just cultivate. Cultivating is one thing, is very important, is gratefully. Thank you, Krishna. I have many conditionings, but still, you've given me these few glimpses of higher taste. That itself gives me conviction. That is a reminder for me that this higher taste is real. This higher taste is real. So I will keep pursuing. So every time you get an experience of higher taste, be grateful. That gratitude, what will happen is, it will please Krishna. And then Krishna will keep guiding us from inside also. Krishna says that, he says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. So we are gratefully practicing bhakti. Krishna from within starts speaking to us and he gives us buddhi yogam tam, gives intelligence. The intelligence for making the connection, for buddhi, for doing yoga, that Krishna gives us, by which we can when the temptation comes, when difficult situations comes, something from inside will tell us, hey, don't do this. So that way, we'll get guidance from Krishna. And that's why it's not very healthy or it's not very transformational, we can say, if we are doing bhakti resentfully or guiltfully. We are thinking, oh, actually, you know, this devotee has told me to do it and this devotee will chastise me if I don't do it, therefore I should do it. Well, initially it might be required, but over a period of time, if we try to cultivate gratitude, then the taste, journey toward higher taste will become easier. That's abhyasa. And then second is, watchfully, we have to be vigilant. Watchfully regulate lower taste. That is vairagya. Vairagya means that raga is attachment. Why raga? Why means without. So without raga, without attachment. So okay, we live in a world where temptations will keep coming to us. We can't avoid them. The world is filled with temptations. And nowadays our devices are filled with temptations. We can't avoid them. But if we are watchful, we are alert. Okay, this is the areas where I tend to slip and fall. Okay, let me be very careful. Let me minimize my access to these things. So that way we can regulate. That is the vairagya. As soon as something attractive comes, not that I have to go and enjoy it, regulate it. By this, we will progress toward the higher taste. And eventually, in this battle between the higher taste and the lower taste, the higher taste will win. Why? Because our mind is trainable. And Krishna is the supreme trainer. It is not just that we are, oh, I'm in this world and lower taste is here, higher taste is here. I'm again and again saying no to this and I'm saying yes to this. It's such a big struggle and I'm fighting against this all alone. Well, you may feel like that. That might be a psychological experience, but that's not the spiritual reality. The spiritual reality is that Krishna is with us and Krishna wants us to get the higher taste. So Krishna is, whatever events we are happening in our life, through it all, Krishna is training us. Krishna is training our mind. Therefore, all that we need to do is just come back to Him. No matter how many times we slip and fall. So, okay, a wave came and hit and I got carried away. But okay, as soon as the wave has gone, let me rush back to the anchor and hold on to the anchor. And this time, let me learn to hold on to the anchor tighter. So don't, sometimes we may slip and fall and we just start beating ourselves up. Oh, I'm so fallen. I'm hopeless. I'm useless. And we keep beating ourselves up. But beating ourselves up won't really purify us. Coming back to Krishna and learning to hold on to Krishna more firmly, that is what will purify us. So, and as I said, we can choose now. We are actually made for Krishna. And we are meant to be. We are all meant to be mad for Krishna. Divyonmad. That is the divine madness is the characteristic of every soul. So in one sense, we can try many things in this world, but nothing other than Krishna is going to satisfy us. But let's turn to Him now. Why delay the inevitable? Inevitable means eventually we may experience many, many things in the world and then we may realize, oh, these don't give me happiness. I need to turn toward Krishna. So from Bharat Maharaj's experience or Bharat Maharaj's choosing, where he had all the pleasures of the world that most of us can only fantasize about. And even then he's turned toward Krishna. That means that in this world, the pleasures are not going to satisfy us. So let's turn toward Krishna for now. And let's keep turning toward Krishna. And gradually, we all will become situated in the higher taste. So I'll summarize. I spoke broadly, 3 points today. So, first thing is, I discussed about what is lower taste, higher taste. So, we discussed in that connection that how do we begin wherever we can. Begin with regulating the lower taste. Begin by relishing the higher taste. Wherever we can, we begin and start off. And every day can be a new beginning. Then the elaborate middle part we're discussing, whose taste are we talking about? The soul is always eternal and pure, but it's dormant now. The intelligence taste can be changed much more easily because it operates through reasoning and logic. But the mind taste changing is very difficult because it is driven primarily by emotions and feelings. So at least change the intelligence taste by regular hearing and gaining philosophical conviction. And then by that, apply the mind. It's like the mother who is convinced, okay, this disease is dangerous, this medicine is essential. The mother will take the medicine and the mother will make sure the child takes the medicine. So mother is like the intelligence and the mind is like the child. And by that, gradually the child will start understanding, hey, this medicine actually makes me feel good. This remembering Krishna is actually good for me. And that is how we will move forward. And the last part we discussed is, we may say that, okay, it's casual. How could somebody fall away when they are getting a higher taste? We'll discuss how. If the disastrous coincidence that somebody can use up the anchor and the deadly wave comes. So like that, we let go of, we are casual about our devotional activities and that's the time when some tantalizing temptation comes up. We might get swept away. That's why just hold on to Krishna. Try to strengthen our grip on Krishna. And even if we slip away, even if we fall away, just come back quickly. So, and we gratefully cultivate higher taste, abhyasa, and watchfully regulate the lower taste, that is vairagya. In that way, the higher taste will win in the hearts of each one of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any reflections or questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Yeah. Thank you for such a wonderful class, Prabhuji. We do have some questions. Do you have time, Prabhu?
Yes.
Okay. Anuradha Mataji, please unmute yourself.
Hi, Krishna Prabhuji. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharajas. Thank you for the wonderful class, Prabhuji. Need to listen to it again, but I had few doubts. Whenever we say that the soul never gets contaminated and things like that, that is one thought. But also in Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, in the purport of text 40, Prabhupada says where the lust is sitting next to the intelligence. And sitting at intelligence, and intelligence is very next to the soul. And then it says that the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistake this as true happiness. This false identification of the soul is very nicely explained in the Shrimad. So he is saying that even the soul is getting contaminated. So this keeps happening. Like we hear one side that soul is Satchidananda, and again we hear that then Prabhupada in the purport is writing the soul also gets contaminated because the intelligence is very next to the soul. So how do we understand this, Prabhuji? How do I reconcile this?
Okay, the soul get contaminated. It's a little complicated subject, but let me try to explain it in one sense. See, the soul is Satchitananda, and the soul's characteristics never change. Krishna says at one level that Adahyo Akledya Ashoshya, he says it cannot be burned, it cannot be killed, it cannot be cut, it cannot be dissolved. So avikario also, he says. Avikario means it cannot even be transformed. So what that means is that if it cannot be transformed also, then how can it get contaminated? So we use the word soul in many senses, sometimes without realizing it. Say, for example, when you say put your heart and soul in service. Now, what does that mean? Is it that the heart inside the chest, you want to take it out and put it in the service? Is it that the soul which is in the area of the heart, you want to take it out and put it in service? No, here we are using this word soul in a non-literal sense, not in a literal sense. So similarly, when it is said the soul becomes contaminated, it is more like the consciousness of the soul becomes contaminated. Consciousness of the soul becomes contaminated. The soul has the energy of consciousness. And this energy of the soul can very easily get contaminated. That means that if for all practical purposes, we don't experience the soul. Even when we want to do science, some logical reasoning with someone, we can't really prove the existence of the soul to them. What we can talk about is the existence of consciousness. And then from the existence of consciousness, we can infer that there is the soul. So similarly for us, what essentially happens is that this is a whole big subject, but when we say the soul is contaminated, that means the consciousness of the soul is contaminated right at its root. Here it is. You can see this figure. So the soul is the root of consciousness. So from the soul, consciousness comes out. Just like if I have a flashlight, and the flashlight light comes out. Like the soul is the source of the consciousness. From here, the consciousness is coming out. And then, so consciousness is the energy of the soul that comes out. The path through which it comes out is the mind. And then it comes to the body. And then through the body, it comes out. And that's how we are conscious of external reality. So the mind is the route of consciousness, the pathway through which consciousciousness comes. The soul is the root of consciousness. The soul is the root of consciousness. The mind is the route of consciousness. So when we say the soul is contaminated, what it means is that the consciousness which is coming out from here only it gets contaminated. So yes, the soul is contaminated in the sense that the consciousness of the soul, which is its defining energy, is contaminated. Does it answer the question?
Yes, Prabhuji, I'll listen to the answer once again so that I can process the answer. So thank you so much, Prabhuji. I have one more question. This is like for my everyday struggle in my own sadhana. I have too many things that I have to, I want to do, I desire to do in Krishna consciousness at the same time. Like right now, I'm listening to the lecture. I was helping my child to do the aarti. Also at the temple, Guru Puja is going on. So I want to do all of it, but I cannot do all of it, of course. So how do I, you know, put myself in peace and do things? I mean, of course, we hear that do one thing at a time. I can listen to this class later too, but then I cannot ask question when it is recorded. So how this struggle, like which one to do, the how to prioritize, how do we understand that and how do we do it for a balanced spiritual life?
Okay. It's a tough challenge for all of us. How do we balance or prioritize when we are having many things to do? Well, the two ways of looking at it. One is that, you know, I want to do more and more service to Krishna, or I want to do more and more things in general, but I'm not able to do it. So is it at one level, it could be transcendental passion. Radharani wants to cook so many things for Krishna. It is said that she's managing 50 stalls simultaneously when she's cooking at Pavan Sarovar. So it's not that spiritual life is very peaceful and aram. It's no, Radharani is very concerned to offer the best to Krishna. So it could be that lalasa to do more and more for Krishna. But however, in this world, it can also be just passion, rajaguna, not transcendental passion, but mundane passion. Where the general characteristic of the mode of passion is we overestimate our capacity. We consider three modes, sattva, rajas, tamas. Rajas is characterized by overestimation of our capacities. Tamas is characterized by underestimation of our capacities. And sattva is characterized by a realistic estimation of our capacities. So we can't always be in sattva, but at least for some time in our life, maybe at the start of every day, we put some time in sattva, plan out what am I going to do this day. Or in a week, sometimes we take a solid break and look at what all we have been doing. What all is doable? What is going over our head now? So that way we come to a realistic estimate of what all we can do. And then sometimes, if we want, we also want to consult others about: am I being lethargic over here? Am I overstretching? Sometimes, if we have a trustworthy friend or a mentor or a guide, then they can also see from an outside perspective and tell us, okay, yeah, you know, you could do more over here. Or maybe you have to cut down a little over here. So I would say sattvaguna is the time when we can estimate our capacities. And from there, we can move forward. And gradually, we learn what is our capacity and we work accordingly. Does it answer the question?
Yes, Prabhuji, completely. I understand that how you said about rajaguna. And I feel it is that. It is definitely not transcendental. It is the rajaguna quality of mind, which is so, so prominent in me. But yes, I would try to work on it and get the help if needed, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. Thank you for such an insightful class. Very grateful to you, Prabhuji. Dandavat pranam, Hare Krishna.
Happy to be of service, Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hareshwar Shyam, go ahead with the next one.
Hare Krishna, Chaitanya Charan Prabhuji. Thank you for another scientific class. Prabhu, one question, Prabhu. Like you were saying about soul, intelligence and mind. But sometimes we say, like you already said in one answer the question, like we say, you know, chant from the heart, right? So what is the role of the heart when we say, you know, in these three elements, Prabhu?
Okay. Now, there are different devotees who have different opinions about this. And we can go into the Upanishads for some time to talk about this. But I'll tell you, broadly speaking, how I understand it.
Okay.
And I'll give some broad Shastric correlation for this. So, see, heart basically is the seat of emotion. It definitely doesn't refer to, say, the biological heart. If somebody says you broke my heart, that doesn't mean the biological organ is broken. What we mean is that you broke my heart means the very core of me where my emotions are situated. That's what was broken. So now, say, now we may, we there are so many romantic movies or romantic novels, and there can be even real life replications of that to some extent, where somebody is very close in a particular relationship and the other person disappoints or betrays them. Now, there may be nothing spiritual in that particular relationship, but the pain that the person experiences is real. So what is happening? That means if you consider the soul is here, the mind is here. And in between, there are many other things. But sometimes the word mind is also used as a shorthand for the entire subtle body. That means we can say there is matter, mind, and consciousness. Matter, mind, and consciousness. So mind refers to the subtle body. So what happens is, when we are broadly overall in material consciousness, at that time, the center of our emotions, the seat, the place where our emotions are concentrated or residing, that is often in something material. So in that sense, our heart is situated there. So that's how some material catastrophe can actually shatter people's hearts. So the heart is the seat of emotions. And depending on where our attachments are, that is where the heart is situated. Now, as we become purified, you could say that from the upper levels of the mind, it starts going down, down, down toward the soul. The seat of our emotion starts going deeper toward the soul. And that's why when Krishna says that, sukhe dukhe samay krutva labha labha jaya jaya. So what happens is, when the seat of our emotion starts going deeper and deeper into our spiritual essence, then those things which would otherwise elated us or dejected us, they don't affect us that much. So our seat of emotion goes further and further away. Now, when in the completely pure stage, the seat of our emotions coincides with the soul. That means our defining emotions are the natural emotions of the soul. We are attached to Krishna. But that doesn't mean that a person is completely stone-hearted about other things. They will also respond appropriately to other emotional situations. But the seat of their emotions has become the soul. So we could say that the heart is where the seat of emotions is. And that will be different for different people based on where their attachments are. So going back to say, chant with your heart. What it means is that put your emotions in it. Not just like one, put all your emotions as much as you can into the act of chanting. So call out to Krishna. Invest your emotions in Krishna. That's the meaning of put your heart in it. Does it answer your question?
Yes, Prabhu. Prabhuji, but this question, when in your PowerPoint, it said mind is the location for the emotions, right, Prabhu? Bhava. Mm. So that gets transformed over the period of time to the heart. That's what you're saying, right, Prabhu?
Okay. It's a complicated question. Does the mind is location of emotions? Yeah. Well, it depends on what exactly we're talking about here.
Okay.
See, it's like for speech, the throat is the location for speech. If the throat is damaged, a person can't speak. But that doesn't mean that the throat is the source of speech. The throat is the tool which is required through which speech comes. So similarly, you could say that if a person is dead, no matter how well functional their throat is, they will not be able to speak. So the soul gives the animating energy, the consciousness through which everything else functions. So from the soul comes consciousness. Now, the consciousness does various things. So consciousness sees. But for seeing, it requires eyes, the physical eyes. Without that, we won't be able to see. So like that, for the soul, in the embodied condition, the soul experiences emotions through the tool of the mind.
Okay.
But ultimately, so you could say there are two things. There are emotions and there is the capacity to experience emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So the capacity to experience emotions comes from the soul, the consciousness of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
But the specific emotions that somebody experiences, that depends on the mind.
No.
And what are the impressions stored in the mind?
Okay.
So say there's an India-Pakistan cricket match. And say recently there was a match in which India lost very badly. So now, whether it is an Indian or a Pakistani, they are ultimately souls. They are their mind. But if it's a Pakistani mind, they'll say, oh, our country won, and they'll be very happy. So Indian, they lost their, what, the Indian mind, the samskara is that, oh, this is terrible. So then what happens over a period of time is that as we become purified, so then I talk about two things. There's the capacity for emotions, and then there are emotions actually. But then there is, you could also say there is like there's a central post, center of our emotions, the place where our emotions are primarily concentrated. So we experience emotions about various things. Say now, if we hear about any kind of terrorist attacks anywhere, we will feel bad. We'll feel distressed to some extent. But when we heard about devotees being attacked in Bangladesh, we felt hurt much more. We felt alarmed. We felt angered. The emotions were more because our emotions are more invested or concentrated. So what we are talking about is that as we become, so where our emotions are concentrated, whether they are at a particular superficial material level based on the impressions, or material things based on the impressions, or they're focused on spiritual reality, on Krishna, that changes. So it's not that the soul has a capacity to experience emotions independent of the mind. But in the embodied state, the soul requires the mind. So, but when we become purified, then the center of the emotion, the central location where our maximum emotions are concentrated, that is not located in something mundane. That becomes located more and more in the spiritual. Okay? In Krishna.
Yeah, thank you very much, Prabhu. Dhanyavad Pranam.
Hare Krishna. So how can... So, I don't know how many questions we can take. You let me know. So Gail Mataji is asking, how can we separate consciousness coming through the mind from the soul when the soul itself is consciousness? Well, the soul is not just consciousness. It's Sat Chit Anand. Chit is the energy of the is the energy of the consciousness. So it's like if I have a, say this is a flashlight. So now if this is a flashlight, so there is a flashlight and there is a light coming from it. So the flashlight, now of course here there's a lot of other things than the flashlight here, but the flashlight is like the soul and the light coming from it is like consciousness. And say if I put it like this, if I put my palm in such a way, let's say you can see the light briefly. So when my palm, so this is the passageway. This is basically a conditioned soul. The passageway through which the consciousness is coming, that is the mind. That is the subtle body through the consciousness is channeled. So can we separate it? Well, in terms of philosophical analysis, we can't separate it. In terms of experience, it's very, very difficult. We only experience consciousness. We don't experience the source of consciousness. It's only when we are in the state of samadhi, at that time, Krishna says in 622 in the Bhagavad Gita, 621 actually, that yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaiva atman atmanam pashyan atmaitushyati. That means that at that time the inner world becomes like a mirror and it shows us ourselves. That's a very advanced stage. So there's one question, we may finish with this. This is AGD.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, are you able?
Yes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, you're muted again.
Am I audible?
Yeah, yes, you are.
Yeah, yes, Prabhuji. Sir. Govind Das from North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Yes,
Prabhu, I have one question on the analogy you were giving, where you said that, you know, the doctor educates the mother about the medicine, and no matter how bitter the medicine is, the mother understands and the mother is able to give the medication to the child. Now, if my situation, I consider here as myself as the child. The child is little grown up, so much so that, you know, doesn't either listens to the mother or, you know, still doesn't take the medication, which is very important. So how do we deal with this situation where mother understands and still the child is, you know, not convinced or not able to be tamed to take the medicine?
Yeah, it's a challenge because sometimes, see, we are mature in some areas of our life, but sometimes in some areas of our life, we tend to become fickle. So we are all individuals. And that's why sometimes Sangha is very helpful. Some areas of our life which are important for us, but which we tend to be a little lethargic about or apathetic about, then it is good to have some devotees who can help us. One of the things which I have found very helpful is this concept called an accountability partner. That means just have some devotee friend and you may say, okay, I've made a resolution this time. Now New Year is coming. I want to read every day, at least for 15 minutes. And then just have that friend check up with us. Okay, did you read today? Maybe they not ask every day, but once a week they ask. And just knowing that they're going to ask us, that makes us want to do it. So that is one way we could do it. And I think what happens for all of us is that in some areas of our life, we are quite mature. If we're not mature, if our intelligence were not alert, we couldn't even have survived in life. What to speak of? Do various things, have a job. You see, even material life is impossible if there is not some basic level of intelligence. If you see in the Puranjan analogy, the whole Puranjan metaphor is quite beautiful. So there Puranjan meets this queen, and the queen is compared to the intelligence. And now we may say that he becomes attached to her and he gets caught in material pleasures. That is true. But then it is described that when he leaves her and goes away, at that time, he becomes very brutal. He starts killing all kinds of animals. And Samacharya explained that basically that animal slaughter is not just referring to animal killing. When he goes away from his queen, it also means that he goes to other women and other things like that. That's also an implication. The point is that Prabhupada in that purport says, a good wife is not different from good intelligence. That's very striking. Sometimes we think that, like for example, here, it said, oh, beautiful wife, but she renounced it. Sometimes you say that Graha Kshetra Sutapta Atta, we get attached to our wives and things like that. But here, the point is that just as a wife provides some regulation for the husband, the wife will keep a watch on the husband. So similarly, the intelligence keeps a watch. So for us, we do have intelligence. And it does work. It does recognize some things are serious. But somehow, for us, some things we may not recognize it to be as serious as they are. I mean, the mind is its own.
Makes sense.
It's the mind has its own conceptions, and they sometimes overpower the mind, the intelligence. So then, 2-3 things can be done. I said that let others help us. Mm-hmm. Even if my intelligence is convinced, if they are convinced, they will remind me. Or other is we read repeatedly about that particular thing. That also reading and hearing repeatedly also helps. Another thing we could do is maybe write things down. Why is this particular thing important? I do courses on journaling. It's a very, very powerful way of crystallizing our thoughts. So if you hear some classes and you hear some striking point in the classes, no, write them down. There's a quote of Prabhupada says, writing things down is the way of realizing them. Writing things down means not just making notes, but writing things in our own words. Sorry. So, and then we can keep that in our maybe notepad in our phone or a physical notepad and just reread it. So when we start becoming frivolous about something which we are meant to be serious about, then we read that. That can also help us become serious again. Okay? There are a few thoughts.
Thank you, Prabhu.
For all of us.
Thank you, sir, bringing this point forward. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Kantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Prabhupada ki. Jai. Jai.
practical question session also. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you so much, Prabhu.
It's all yours effort, Prabhu. It's amazing what you do for all of us conditioned souls. You put hours and hours of time in these PPTs and to explain all of us. It's just amazing, Prabhu. All glories to you, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu, for your time and your services. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Very, very enlightening class. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Beautiful, beautiful class.
Thank you, Krishna. Hare Krishna. Take care of
everyone. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.